Chapter 30, India Under the Mughals, the Mughal Dynasty. When Prince Henry the Navigator first began to send expeditions down the coast of Africa, he hoped that they would find a way across Africa to India. Most Europeans didn't know any more about India than they did about Africa. They simply thought of India as a distant place where valuable spices could be bought. But India, like Africa, had a long and complicated history of its own. When we first learned about the Middle Ages, we learned that India was made up of many different small kingdoms until a king named Chandragupta set out to bring these small kingdoms together into one empire. Chandragupta's descendants, the kings of the Gupta dynasty of India, ruled over a strong, united India. For many years, this unified India lived in peace and comfort. Art, science, literature, and music flourished during this golden age of India. But then the Huns, who had already attacked Rome and Byzantium, invaded India. The Indian emperors fought them off, but the effort weakened the Indian Empire so much that it crumbled apart again. For hundreds of years after the Hun invasion, India was made up of many small separate kingdoms that fought constant wars with each other. One of the largest Indian kingdoms, the land surrounding the city of Delhi, was conquered by a Muslim warrior who made himself its sultan. Other Indian kingdoms were still ruled by Indian noblemen, but their constant battles with each other made India poorer and poorer. And the country also suffered from floods, from famines that wiped out crops, and from diseases that killed thousands. India needed a strong leader to make it peaceful and prosperous once more. Finally, this leader appeared. But he wasn't from India. He was an Ottoman Turk. Do you remember how the Ottoman Turks conquered Constantinople? Their greatest emperor was Suleiman the Magnificent. But now the Ottoman Empire, once the largest in the world, had started to divide into small quarreling kingdoms. One of these small kingdoms on the edge of the once great empire was inherited by a Muslim prince named Babur. Babur was a fierce warrior, a descendant of Genghis Khan himself. His enemies called him Babur the Tiger because of his courage, but Babur was driven out of his kingdom by a rival ruler. He wandered through the east looking for a new home. When Babur heard that the Sultan of Delhi was having trouble controlling his Indian kingdom, Babur decided to invade India and take Delhi for himself. The Sultan raised a huge army of 100,000 men and 1,000 war elephants to fight back. But although Babur had only 12,000 men, he mounted them on quick, strong horses. The elephants ridden by the Sultan's men were huge, but they were also slow and ponderous. Babur's men could dart around these elephants and attack them from behind. And Babur armed his soldiers with muskets, while the Sultan's army had only spears, swords, and bows. Babur conquered the Indian city of Delhi and named himself its emperor. Then he turned his attention to the other Indian kingdoms around him. These kingdoms were still under Hindu rule, but Babur defeated them one by one. These Hindu kingdoms were frightened of Babur's rule. After all, when the Sultan of Delhi had taken over his Indian kingdom, he had killed many of his Hindu subjects. He had looted Hindu temples, destroyed Hindu holy places, and smashed holy images. But Babur wanted to be a good emperor. Although he was a Muslim, he allowed the Hindus of India to keep on practicing their own religion. He set up government offices all over his empire to make sure that laws were followed. He encouraged the Indian people to send their children to school to learn to read and write. Slowly, India began to prosper again. Even though he ruled India well, Babur wasn't entirely happy in the land he had conquered. "This is a place of little charm," he wrote in his own account of his reign. "There are no arts, no poetry, no scholarship, no colleges, no good horses, no meat, grapes, or fruit, and it is hot and dusty. There is no running water, no ice, no baths, no candles, and the country is dry and desolate." To remind himself of his home, Babur planted a beautiful garden on the banks of the river in his capital city, Agra. In his homeland, good Muslims often planted gardens on the sides of the mountains, where melted snow ran down in streams between the beds of flowers. These gardens were supposed to remind Muslims of the paradise they would enter when they died, a paradise filled with gardens of cool water. There were no mountain streams in Agra, but Babur filled tanks with water from the river. In these tanks, he built water wheels with jugs tied to each rung of the wheel. Buffalo pulled the wheels around and around. As they turned, the jug scooped up water and poured it down a carved stone, where it cascaded into streams that ran through Babur's garden. Next to the streams, the homesick emperor planted beds of beautiful flowers. He planted cypress trees, which stay green all year, to represent eternal life. He planted fruit trees, which bloom, bear fruit, and then shed their leaves to represent life on earth. And he put marble benches in his garden so that he could sit under the trees and pretend that he was back in his homeland again. He called his garden the Garden of Scattered Flowers, but his people called it Ramba. Today you can still see the remains of the Garden Ramba in the city of Agra in India. Babur only ruled his Indian empire for 4 years before he died, but his descendants ruled India for many years. They became known as the Mughal dynasty. The name Mughal comes from Mongol, because Babur was descended from Genghis Khan, the great Mongol. Akbar of India. After Babur the Tiger died, he left his oldest son Humayun in charge of his empire. But not long after Humayun came to the throne, he was driven out of India by invaders. He spent the next 15 years trying to get the throne of India back. Finally, Humayun was able to return to his palace in Delhi, but he had lost much of his father's empire. Just 1 year after Humayun returned to India, he slipped on the steps of his library, hit his head, and died. His 13-year-old son Akbar was crowned emperor in his place. Akbar was young, but he was determined to restore the glory of his grandfather's empire. He launched a furious campaign to reconquer the lands that Humayun had lost. And after he got those lands back under his control, he added even more cities to his empire. By the time he died, after a reign of 49 years, Akbar ruled an empire that covered half of India. Like his grandfather Babur, Akbar was a fair and just ruler. Although he himself was a Muslim, Akbar believed that he would need to be popular with his Hindu subjects if he wanted to stay on the throne. So he married a Hindu princess and allowed Hindu worship to continue in his country. Akbar became so famous that his people told story after story about him. Most of these stories are probably folk tales that didn't really happen, but they show how well-liked and respected Akbar was. In these stories, Akbar always makes decisions with the help of his state minister, a Hindu named Birbal. Sometimes Birbal corrects the king, but because he is a fair man, willing to do what is right, Akbar always listens. Here is one of those stories from the time of the Mughal dynasty, the Bad Luck Servant. In the days when Akbar ruled in his palace at Agra, there was a servant named Gulshan, whom everyone thought to be bad luck. Whenever the eggs were rotten, the cook would yell, "Gulshan, you're bad luck. These eggs turned because of you." If the bread burned in the oven, the baker would bellow, "Gulshan must have been here. He's bad luck." And if it rained on a feast day, the whole palace would blame poor Gulshan. When the Emperor Akbar heard about this, he said, "This poor man cannot be the cause of all the bad luck in my palace. Let him be my servant for the day, and when all goes well, my household will see that he doesn't bring bad luck at all." So he sent his minister Birbal to tell Gulshan that he would bring the emperor his breakfast the following morning. Gulshan was terrified at the thought of serving the great Akbar himself. But when he got up in the morning, he washed his hands, combed his hair, put on a clean tunic, and carried the emperor's breakfast into the royal bedchamber. Akbar thanked him, and Gulshan bowed and withdrew. "There," Akbar thought to himself, "nothing bad has happened." He began to eat his breakfast, but soon discovered a hair in his bread. "Bad luck," he said out loud, "but surely that could occur on any morning." He pulled the hair out of his bread and went on eating, but soon his leg began to itch. He peered down and saw that he had been bitten by a sandfly. He slapped the fly and said, "Bad luck, but I've been bitten by flies before." Akbar began to dress. While he was putting on his crown, his captain of the guard rushed in and said, "Your Majesty, the peasants in the north are rioting. They demand lower taxes and better food." "Ride north and settle the riot," Akbar ordered. But the captain of the guard had scarcely left when Akbar's steward knocked anxiously on the door. "Your Majesty," he said, "there are maggots in all of the meat that we preserved for the winter. I will have to throw it all out." "Throw it out," Akbar ordered. But the steward had barely gone away when the master of the horses called from the door. "Your Majesty, your favorite horse has gone lame." "Saddle me another one," Akbar said wearily. But the master of the horses had hardly finished speaking when Akbar's queen ran into the room. "Our son has fallen and cut his arm," she wailed. "Call the doctor at once." "That's enough," Akbar shouted. "Gulshan is bad luck. Take him out at once and hang him." Now, when the minister Birbal heard about the king's order, he went to the prison where Gulshan had been thrown to await his execution. "Come with me at once," he ordered the unfortunate man, "and I will speak to the emperor on your behalf." Akbar was in his throne room when Birbal arrived with Gulshan behind him. "Why have you brought that man into my presence?" Akbar demanded. "He is bad luck. His was the first face I saw this morning, and nothing has gone right since."
"Sire," Birbal said, "may I ask this man a question, so that you may hear the answer?"
"What question?" Akbar asked.
Birbal turned to Gulshan.
"When you got up this morning, you were a free man, weren't you?" he asked.
"Yes," moaned the unfortunate man, "and now I have been sentenced to hang."
"What bad luck!" Birbal exclaimed. "And whose face did you see first thing this morning?"
The face of the emperor," Gulshan whispered.
Birbal turned to Akbar. "You saw this man's face this morning and had bad luck," he said. "But you are still alive and master of your country. He saw your face, and now he is sentenced to death. Whose face brought worse luck, his or yours?"
Akbar was silent for a moment and then began to laugh. "Birbal, my old friend," he said, "you have kept me from an unjust act. Gulshan, you may go free, but please, can you find another house in which to serve?"